The Outspoken Cyclist podcast is supported by the Dodd Camera Company. An Ohio institution in photography for over 100 years, Dodd Camera has stayed right in step with the newest in digital cameras and accessories, as well as offering services such as photo restoration and large format printing. Dodd Camera stores are located in Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, and Chicago. And if you don't have one in your town, you can find them online at doddcamera.com. At Dodd Camera, the focus is on you. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello, welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Lees, along with Tim McKenna.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Tim. What's new?
We're making it through the tour.
We are. And we will talk about the tour a little bit later. It's been pretty crazy.
Right. I'm not injured and I'm not dropping out.
Okay. There you go. But you could say polar vortex this week.
Yes.
Honest to goodness, what a crazy summer. But there is a lot going on in cycling, which is way more important than the weather. Hey, there's a name we haven't mentioned on our show in quite a while.
What's that?
Lance Armstrong.
I don't
Who's
know.
He?
Who is
Who's
that?
He? Yeah. So it's not to say he isn't in the news somewhere most of the time. But he's going to ride Ragbri next week, and he's still fighting his legal battles. And USA Today reported that just a few days ago, he might start another foundation if he isn't taken back by his former Livestrong.
Okay.
He wants to give back to the cancer research thing. But the person to whom we owe a huge debt of gratitude is not only a shining light on everything that Lance did to bring down the entire era of cycling, but also who, from the very beginning, has never wavered from the truth about Armstrong's lies, more lies, and damned lies. Yes, indeed. My first guest this evening is that person. We haven't spoken directly with Betsy Andreu in well over a year, and I thought it was time for us to check in with her. She's traveled all over the country speaking her truth to journalists and reporters. She still managed to keep three kids on track, as well as her husband, who's actually kid number four, ex-pro racer Frankie Andreu. This week, the Belfast Telegraph's Mike Gilson had this to say about her. Betsy Andreu, what a gal. Just two words to her name, but mention them to any professional cyclist from the dark doping days of the Tour de France, and the power of them will send shivers down their spines. You see, Betsy is a superhero, a feisty, gutsy American dame who took on a corrupted, testosterone-fueled, male-dominated sport and beat it hands down. That it is cleaner today is primarily down to the pretty on the outside, tough as an old boots on the inside, Betsy. I mean, the article was wonderful. Again, it was in the Belfast Telegraph, If anybody wants to read it. We will also speak with the National 24-hour record holder, record breaker, Scott Lukart. Scott and his twin brother have done plenty of pretty amazing things, but this year Scott set a new record for distance. I'm always fascinated by these ultra-distance cyclists. We'll learn how he trains, what he's riding, and what his next goal is. I mean, you know, you broke the 24-hour record. What's next, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And then finally, we'll also hear from a cyclist, a longtime cyclist and an entrepreneur. Her name is Kathy Rogers. Kathy is about two-thirds of the way across country on a bike adventure that will land her back in her home city of Pittsburgh. At this time, she's in Madison, Wisconsin. She's the CEO of Aerotech Cycling Designs and has some really interesting ideas about bicycle apparel for men, women, and even kids, which is really, that's a hard one.
Yeah.
Kids in cycling apparel. So we do have a bit of news and our usual chit-chat. Oh, I have a real quick shout-out. Ready?
Go ahead.
One of our listeners and supporters, Jerry F. Happy birthday, Yomes! Let's head on up to Ann Arbor and talk with Betsy Andreu. Betsy, thank you so much for joining me on the show this evening.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I have to say, I really like the intro music.
Oh, wait, we have new music.
Wait,
is this?
You do?
Yes. I don't know. Have you heard us in the last 2 weeks?
No, I didn't.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, we have new music, which I think you'll like just as well, but you'll let me know, yes?
Of course, I will.
We haven't spoken, actually, since 2012. So much has happened.
Yeah, life is pretty much different.
So the last time we talked, your truth, which was always the right truth, became known to everybody, and people started to really listen. And then, excuse the expression, all hell broke loose. So how has your life changed?
Well, this is what's really interesting, is I guess the number one thing, because I'm still the same person, I still have my wits about me, and I think I'm pretty funny, actually. And so
that's different. Looks aren't everything, Betsy. Go ahead. That's what everybody says to me. So, you know, I have a perfect
Andy,
face
Andy
for radio.
Andy Shen's going to like that one, so thanks, Diane.
Yeah, Andy will. You're right.
It's different. The number one reason is that there's less stress, a lot less stress. I was
stress
diagnosed.
Can do such horrible things to you.
Oh, it's crazy. I couldn't figure out. I have some thyroid issues, thyroid and iron issues. I'm severely anemic. When I was doing some blood work, I came up pre-diabetic, and it didn't make sense because I just do not, I'm not overweight. I don't have, meet the criteria, right? And it didn't make sense. And so the doctor had asked me, are you under stress? And I said, oh,
have
my
God. Have you met me is what my answer would have been.
Let me tell you. And so I just gave him a 30-second lowdown, and he said, well, stress will do that to you. So he said, you're going to have to find a better way to deal with it. And I said, the fact that I am sane and I'm trying to laugh, I think I'm dealing with it in a very good manner. And he said, you have to find a better way to deal with it because it's not working. And what's amazing is that after Oprah, everything changed. I'm no longer pre-diabetic. I don't have that stress. My cortisol levels are at a normal limit. And so it's been incredibly different. I never used social media. I hate social media, but then I got a Facebook account, and it's become somewhat a forum. I post articles, updates. I have fun on it. I've met some really good people. I got to connect with some awesome human beings like Inga Thompson. I use social media. That's another thing.
How about your exercise program? Are you doing any more exercise? I know running around with kids is exercise enough, but I mean, you do it.
No,
have
I see what you're saying. Well, okay, so I try to jog just 3 days a week, 30 minutes each time, and do a very light workout with weights a couple times a week.
Oh, good.
But it doesn't always work out.
Yeah.
But I try to get, you know, walks. Well, at least I have a Fitbit that I'm absolutely addicted to, so I do try to get 10,000 steps in a day.
Life has a way of working itself out. And, you know, you are the one who broke the story in a way that would have brought it all down on you. I understand. And the fact that you've come out the other side with a big shining light over your head is pretty cool, I think. It's very cool.
Well, it was, I like to say, in the words of Bo Schembechler, the team, the team, the team. It
right.
wasn't just me.
No.
Thank God for David Walsh. Thank God for Travis Tigert. There's no way the truth would have come out without those two people. I really don't think so. And it was just like, it was a team effort. One thing led to another. And so it was just a combination of everything and how the dominoes ended up falling.
How has life changed for Frankie since all of this? Because, of course, he was sort of in that same dark place with everybody pointing fingers at him as well as you. Well, everybody, meaning the person who does not need to be named. But, you know, how is Frankie doing? I know he's in Europe right now at the tour.
Yeah, well, he's doing, he really enjoys doing the tour talks and the race radios that he's doing with bicycling.com. And I think he's really good at that.
He is.
He likes the sport. He's very smart when it comes to the tactics of the sport. He likes to stay. He wants to stay in cycling. He's the likable curmudgeon, you know. We could have Bill Gates' money, and he'd still be complaining about how much things cost.
Isn't he coaching?
He's directing a small American team.
Right, directing.
5-Hour Energy.
Yeah. Which is awesome. You know, he's keeping his hand in. I want to remind our listeners, we're speaking with Betsy Andreu, who is, you know, the shining voice of our sport when it comes to anti-doping. Very important stuff. Do you think things have changed in the Peloton? I mean, it's sort of a stupid question, but I'd like your perspective on that.
I'm getting all my news, honestly, from Frankie and James Start through Bicycling.com and from what Cosmo Catalano says when he does his little webcast, which I really like those. I think cycling it's like life. All sports is like life in the sense that you are always going to have somebody who is going to try to cheat because they think they can do it in a better way and in a smarter way to get ahead. And when you have millions at stake, I think that's going to be a no-brainer. It's no different than some people on Wall Street, some unethical doctors, people in academia. You're always going to have cheats. I think what sets cycling apart from other sports is that the majority of journalists are now demanding. They want the cyclists to be held accountable, and I think the fans are disgusted. Whereas with Major League Baseball and the NFL, I think there's more of an inclination just to say, you know what, they're going to do it anyway, so let them do it. And, of course, we have those people in cycling, too.
Right.
But I think there's going to be people cheating in the Peloton, but I think it's going to be harder. And I think cycling does better than any other sport to police the riders. And I'm not talking about the UCI either. I'm truly talking about the journalists.
Interesting. Interesting. So media is holding the whole sport to task, which I think is
awesome.
That's
from my perspective.
I think that's interesting. So let me ask you about some of the things you've had to do over the last couple of years. You did a lot of traveling. You've done a lot of interviewing and a lot of work with people who there have been books, there have been movies and everything else. How were you able, no wonder you were not feeling that well, but how were you able to travel and speak and show up at all these places and still maintain your three kids are not babies.
No, and they're all involved in their sports and music and activities and with the school. But when I would travel, it was an overnight trip. When I went to the Toronto International Film Festival to see The Armstrong Lie, I drove to Toronto. It was under 4 hours.
Yeah, that's right. It's not that far from you.
Yeah, it's right. Not that far. Colorado Springs was overnight. New York City was overnight. So it wasn't really that. I wasn't gone for a long period of time. And then Frankie, we always made it, or it happened, where Frankie was at home so that he could, he was the stay-at-home dad, and I would just come home to a messier-than-normal house, Frankie.
Thank you very much, Frankie. All right, so since all of this happened, since the news broke that Lance Armstrong actually did dope, and there was an article that came out this week that said, well, if they're not going to let me back into Livestrong, I'm going to start my own foundation, which is another whole issue. But there have been no less than 4 books, a bunch of documentaries. Which of those do you think tells the story best, in your opinion?
I would definitely say go back and read David Walsh's book From Lance to Landis from 2006. Because he really sets the stage, and he tells the story. And given that we are where we are now, 8 years later, or I think it was in 2007, I'm sorry, 7 years later, it's an absolutely fascinating read. If you go to Wheelman, Vanessa O'Connell, and Reid Albergati, those two people broke almost every single major story that there was, and there is no other book that explains Lance Inc. better than that book. And I think Juliette McCurr's book, Cycle of Lies, was a good biography because I learned there that his whole being raised a poor a poor boy with no dad was completely bunk. And so it was a fascinating, I think, profile of him as a person.
So where do you think it's all going to go now? I don't know exactly where everything is right now, but I know you still keep tabs on it because there needs to be a wrap up of this at some point, I would think.
Well, we've got two lawsuits looming, and they're big ones. You've got the SCA lawsuit, which is coming up, and you have the Keetam case, and he is going to be he's gonna fight tooth and nail. There's just, in my opinion, he is not going to settle. He's going to try to keep his fortune, and the way he works it, he will just delay everything and until the last possible day that he can, until he files another motion, for example. It's just going to take a long time. So that's where it's at.
Well, at what point, and I know this is what he hopes for, at what point do people just forget? Or do you think that people will just say, it's not worth being engaged in it anymore, we're moving on?
Oh, yeah, well, and I do have people just say, get over it, you know, let it go. And the thing is, I have a flip phone. I am not always engaged. If I post an article or make a comment, it doesn't mean that I am constantly checking to see what the heck is going on. I don't think we should dwell on this, but it's not over yet. I think if we let it go and forget about it, then we're not going to be holding him accountable for the next round of BS that comes out. And so I think he has to be he's a great role model for what not to do and how not to be. I mean, should we have said that with John Edwards? You know what? The guy's sorry. Let's let him back into politics. Or with Bernie Madoff, he paid his time in jail. He's an old guy. You know, he gave millions and millions of his own money to actual cancer research.
Right.
So should we have that attitude? I don't think so.
Certainly not yet. He hasn't done anything that says, I'm sorry for what I did, and what can I do to make restitution on any level?
Well, if you look at Juliet McCurr's book, Lance actually said, and it's on page 396, I hate those mother effers, the Betsys, the Walshes, the Lamonts, and I still hate them. Does that sound like here's a guy who's contrite? Not to me.
And you're one of those people he's directing that venom at.
But that's his issue. I can live with the peace knowing that I extended an olive branch, and I really, truly wanted to just bury the hatchet and forgive. But I got to tell you, Diane, if he was contrite in that phone call, it lasted that 20 minutes, and then it was done. It for a half hour for me and Frankie. Then it was completely over, and he got back into fighting mode. And if you're truly sorry, you make amends with people, and he's not done anything to make amends other than to show that he's made all nice with Emma. And he apologized to Christoph Bassanz, but Bassanz didn't buy it, you know?
Right, right. So what's next for you and Frankie? Frankie's going to be working with this team. He's doing that. You're raising three boys?
No, two.
Oh, two and one?
Yep, two boys and a girl.
What do your kids think about all this?
Well, so Frankie and Marta, they're 15 and 13, and so they know. Stevie is 11. He doesn't know the entire story yet.
Okay.
But none of them could understand why I was on TV or on the big screen when I told the truth, because you should tell the truth, right?
Right, exactly. Like, what's so special about this?
Yeah, they just don't get it. They really don't get it. And what's funny is when I said I was doing an interview with you, so I asked my mom if the kids could go to her house while I did it. The oldest started making fun of me because when I was on Anderson Cooper right after Oprah,
right,
I got teary-eyed, and he said, so are you going to break down and cry and like you did on TV?
No, we can tell him now. Listen, buddy, we're laughing. You know,
exactly.
No more tears about this subject. This subject.
Yeah.
Well, you know
exactly.
What's so cool, what has been right along, is anybody who listened to you at the beginning sees that your position has not moved one degree. And it's always been the same. You always told the truth right from the very beginning. It's just amazing how long it took for some other people to come around and say, wow, she was right.
Yeah, it is. And so, I mean, I guess if there's smoke, there's fire, you know. And one thing that I will always, if this has given me just even a little bit of a platform, I really want to try to tout initiatives like Bike Pure and like USADA's True Sport. And that's one thing that I will not shut up about. I am not going to shut up about the dangers of PEDs, especially when it relates to kids, because we see that children are as young as 12 are now starting to take performance enhancing drugs. I think it's sick and it's not right. So if I can please ask your listeners if they're interested in getting their school, and now this is on my own. This USADA didn't tell me to do this at all, but it's something I deeply believe in. You can contact me on my Facebook page and ask or go to USADA's True Sport. It's USADA.org/TrueSport. They have a wonderful initiative geared towards children in grade school, middle school, and high school. And it's all about competing with integrity, and they do touch upon, obviously, PEDs. But I think that's really important. What I would like to do is get schools in the United States to join the True Sport program. Not one school in Michigan has joined yet. And so I have my son's high school. They were looking into it, and they're going to take the True Sport Pledge. I have my children's grade and middle school. They're going to take the True Sport Pledge. And so I think it's really important, and it's a great message that we send to our children. When you have guys like Phil Guyman, who is a University of Florida grad, and he has a book out writing on $10 a day.
Right.
And how
we just interviewed him.
In
his
journey, okay, I'm going to have to listen to that. his journey, and you have Tyler Wren, who is a professional cyclist, and he is a Princeton grad. These are excellent role models, not just for kids in cycling, but for kids in sport. And this is what we have to tout, and we have to have the parents say, you know what, you're not going to lose every game. It's okay, because sports teaches us more than just winning and losing with grace and about health and sportsmanship. And it's not just, it's not just about winning and losing, you know?
Well, you know what, Betsy? I think on that note, we will post a link to USADA's
True Sport.
And once again, I know we live so close together and yet we never get together. I really enjoy talking with you. Always, always a bright voice in cycling. And I appreciate all the work that you do.
And you know what? Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. So I'm grateful. So thank you, Diane. And
you're
I really
welcome.
Like your program. And it's because your questions are so, they're good. And
thank
so
you.
I appreciate that as well.
You take care. Say hi to Frankie. And have a great rest of your summer.
Okay. Thanks, Diane.
Bye-bye. Betsy Andreu joined me from her home in Michigan. Always a wonderful conversation. She's just a bright shining star in our sport. We're going to take a quick break on The Outspoken Cyclist, and we'll be back.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit DoddCamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I am Diane Lees.
And I'm Tim McKenna.
And I think we have time for a little bit of newsy news. What do you say?
Yeah, we can
Okey-doke.
Do so.
What you got?
You know, I love doing stuff on Twitter. There's always interesting things that happen there and a lot of news breaks. And you get a lot of different people that follow you. And I happened to click on one of the Twitter persons that followed me, and in their profile was listed 24 hours of booty.
Uh-huh. I know why you really clicked on it.
Oh, well.
Okay. You're a guy.
I needed to know.
Oh, of course.
Well, in her background picture, there were some cyclists back there. And it turns out that 24 hours of booty is a bicycle ride.
Oh.
It's on a closed course that you, for 24 hours, will just simply continue to lap till you make up a certain amount of whatever your distance is. And it's designed as a fundraiser to help fund cancer fighting programs. There are four different events throughout the year. You can find all this information at the number 24 and then spell out hoursofbooty.org.
Okay.
So Indianapolis, Charlotte, Columbia, and Atlanta, all four have events, and two of them have already been done so far this year, and there are still two more to go. So stop at 24 Hours of Booty, check it out, and tell them Tim sent you.
24 Hours of Booty, huh? Yeah, okay. I'm not sure about riding around in a circle for 24 hours, but okay. I wonder how long the course is. Does it give you any indication?
I think they're all different, depending on what state you're in.
All right. So I don't want to go into a lot of the tour this year, but I don't think we can let the news report go by without my commentary on my guy, remember?
Yep. You picked him right off.
Right. And even though he has abandoned, his performance in Stage 11 has to go down as one of the most courageous rides ever. After several crashes in earlier stages, Andrew Tolansky found himself off the back in the early in Stage 11, sat by the side of the road, and with one of his trainers decided to make the choice to get back on his bike and ride the final kilometers of the race. Now, the way it works is when the leader comes across the line, there is a percentage of time that the last man has to come across the line and not be DQ'd. So he was in a lot of pain, obviously. He got back on the course. There was just a follow car behind him. I mean, so he was out there all by himself and began that lonely ride to the finish, and I don't think anybody had dry eyes. He would have had 37 minutes from the time the stage winner crossed the finish line to complete the course. And not only France, which did not turn off the televisions as it usually does when, you know, once the podiums are done and all. I mean, all that was done. And Tolansky's
right.
Still riding
yep.
on the course. The whole world was watching and rooting for him. So I sat in front of my TV with tears streaming down my face. He put his head down and he just pedaled. Now, you asked me, should he have finished the stage?
Right.
Right. And I said, I didn't think it was the right question. He did finish the stage. He had 5 minutes to spare. And he did abandon on stage 12. But he left the race with his head held high. And as they say on tour, he lived to race another day. He's still my hero. And I tweeted that right away. I said,
yep.
There is my hero. So that's my story about Andrew Tolansky. And you go.
I agree with you. The question, I asked the wrong question. And I read an article that said that the announcer, while they were escorting people off the stand for the yellow and the polka dot jersey, as he crossed the finish line, said something to the effect of, and that is also the tour. I think it was a great story.
It was the story of this tour. I mean, this tour has been insane as it is. So, yeah. Move
on. Well, I can't top that story, but cyclingutah.com, drive-throughs and biking. Salt Lake City Council to consider ordinance allowing cyclists to use the drive-through.
That's been an issue. I can remember somebody being turned down at places like McDonald's and banks.
Yep.
If they were on bikes. So that's kind of cool.
Well,
I know.
And this is
time has come.
And the way that they're looking at this is whether you're on bike or whether you're on foot. So the Salt Lake City Council will consider an ordinance that allows bicyclists and pedestrians to use drive-through windows. Currently, some of the businesses prevent this, leaving cyclists unable to purchase food and other goods when the lobby of the business is closed and the drive-thru remains open. I think this would also make it a lot easier. You don't have to worry about bringing your bike inside and locking it up.
Which is a big deal.
Right. And all of that is. So we're going to go ahead and follow this and see how it turns out. But okay. I think that's interesting. And as you said, I think we'll start to see it more and more in the future.
We has ourselves a Cleveland article. This is from Cleveland.com. Man who struck and seriously injured bicyclist after drinking in Ohio City granted a new trial. Now, Ohio City is on our near west side. If you don't know Cleveland very well, it is sort of this Renaissance area that has been rebuilt with nice, you know, like townhouses and restaurants, you know, this tony little area. So Sagamore Hills man sentenced to 5 years in prison for hitting and seriously injuring a bicyclist on the Lorraine Carnegie Bridge after an evening with friends at Ohio City Breweries has been granted a new trial. Gregory Shilo is free on bond after spending 1 year in prison. He had his first pretrial Wednesday before Cuyahoga County Common Pleas Judge Cassandra Collier-Williams, who found him guilty of aggravated vehicular assault and driving while intoxicated following a bench trial in June of 2013. The victim, David Gamble, is a quadriplegic. He has filed a civil suit against Shilo, Great Lakes Brewing Company, and Bar 25, LLC. Shiloh's sentence was recently vacated by the 8th District Court of Appeals, which ruled Collier-Williams should not have admitted as evidence an anonymous letter claiming Shiloh was extremely intoxicated that night. Oh, my goodness. This is just so sad. The new trial will focus on the investigation and Gamble's bicycle, which could not be found for the first trial, but was discovered in a police evidence room by an investigator, Friedman said. The appellate court validated our contention that the state of Ohio failed to produce crucial evidence in advance of the trial to the prior defense team, Friedman said of the letter. This conduct violated Mr. Shiloh's rights to a fair trial, and with all the evidence now known, we will proceed to trial, confident that Mr. Shiloh will be completely exonerated this time. Seriously? And I'd like to hear what Steve Magus has to say down in Cincinnati. All right, I hope you have something better than that.
This is echonews.com.au. Last month, there was an airliner that unveiled the most luxurious passenger experience in the skies, a three-room suite staffed by a butler and chef on its forthcoming Airbus A380 flights from London to Abu Dhabi. This month, the uncomfortable reality of no-frills flying kicked in. The European aircraft manufacturer is proposing a seat that's borrowed from bicycles and will add more than 50 passengers aboard its narrow-bodied plane. So, this is all based on a patent that was applied for. They're going to take the old bicycle seat, the big tractor seat.
Yeah.
It's got a little backrest and it's got two little armrests so we can squish more people into airplanes. Like, we need to do more of that anyway, right? There isn't anything in the proposal yet for this, but the fact that somebody's applied for the patent is enough for me. That's just...
it's absurd. Can we just say absurd?
Yes.
All right. I think on that note, we're going to head on down to New Philadelphia, Ohio, and find out about what it takes to ride for 24 hours and set a record. What do you say?
Yep.
Okay. Here we go. Good evening, Scott. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me, and congratulations on your ultra distance record.
Thank you. Good evening. Nice to be here.
When did you first get into ultra-distance racing? I'm always fascinated by you guys. You guys are a little nuts, but that's okay. Cycling is nuts, you know?
We are. And, you know, I was just like the typical kid. I grew up riding a 10-speed and then did not ride at all until about 10 years ago. And my twin brother, was a road cyclist. And I said one Sunday afternoon, can I try your bike? And so I rode about 15 miles and walked up the only hill I went over and was completely hooked. I was out of shape, but it was just an addiction from the beginning. And so from that point on, I put away the golf club bike ever since.
So when did you get into ultra distance riding then?
Well, I started riding in the fall of 2003 and it was that winter. I got hooked on it. I rode right through the Ohio winter, and at a ride during the winter, someone mentioned to me that there was an event in south of Grand Rapids, Michigan, and it was a very simple event. It was just a 24-hour event that, you know, it was you could just go, and everybody could ride as many miles as they wanted. And so I did it the following year. So I started riding in about September of 2003 and did it the first time in June of 2004.
So what was your mileage, your very first race?
Well, it was interesting. I'd worked with a coach, and I said my goal was 300 miles. And I ended up riding 424. And my twin brother went and rode with me. and on separate bikes, and we totaled our mileage up. He rode 409, and at that point, we set the sibling record at the National 24-Hour Challenge in Michigan. So it was success at the beginning, and therefore probably led to, you know, sticking with it.
Well, you said right at the beginning of our conversation that you took Mark's bike, you rode 15 miles, and you were addicted. Riding this 24-hour challenge, and I think it takes a certain kind of person to do ultra-distance races, and I know a lot of people who do, who ride PBPs or ride Calvin's or this National 24-hour. What do you think it is about the event and or you that compels you to do these kinds of really ultra-distance things?
Yeah, I think for me, it's because I got into cycling. I'm 51 years old. By the time I got into cycling, I was in my early 40s. And it was just something that I could do to get in shape. And the nice part about it was there was a direct correlation between, you know, if you trained right, you got the results. And so you sort of got out of it what you put into it. And so I found out that I just had a natural ability to ride longer. And the nice thing about riding longer was it allowed me to go further and be more of an adventure cyclist. But, you know, if I wanted to see what was on the other side of the hill, I got to where, well, I can go over any hill, and so I can go farther. And it was just the personal challenge in realizing that, you know, that's something I can do, and I can do it even as I get older, because a lot of the best ultra cyclists in the world are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Yes, that is true. That is true. In fact, you may know one. Have you done any of the PBP rides?
I have not.
Okay. Are you training for next year?
I'm going to race across America next year.
Oh, you are. And that's what we're going to talk about. You've already done Race Across America once.
Yeah, I entered in 2009. I did not finish. I had an injury in Arizona. But it was a learning experience, and to be honest, I was probably too inexperienced. But, you know, Race Across America, you know, it is probably the toughest, you know, bicycle race in the world. I don't think many would argue that. And there's just so much to do, because you organize a crew of 8 or 9 people and all the logistics. And so I'm very fortunate. My twin brother, who right after we raced Michigan in 2004, he was soon diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And Dr. Jay Alberts, which you probably know and may have been on your show, but Jay's a great guy and a great friend. And so we raised money for his research at the Cleveland Clinic and was very successful at doing that in 2009. And my brother has been a patient of his and has very much benefited from Dr. Jay's work.
I have a question about Parkinson's. Is he your identical twin or a fraternal twin?
He's a fraternal twin.
Okay, so is there a genetic component to Parkinson's?
Some say yes and some say no. So the research, I don't believe, is conclusive.
Hmm. And how is Mark doing?
He's doing really well. He is a very avid exerciser. He keeps himself in good shape. He does everything that he can do to control the symptoms, and has a great attitude and is a great fundraiser for Parkinson's.
I am speaking with Scott Lukart. He's down in New Philadelphia, Ohio. He holds the record for the National 24-Hour Challenge. What is that mileage that you came up with this year?
511.1 miles.
It's just insane. I love it. I don't even like driving 500 miles in a day. Tell us a little bit about your training schedule. How do you get ready for something like a 24-hour challenge?
You know, there's a lot of different ways to do it. I work with a coach out of Georgia, and some will ride more miles than me. I ride between 300 to 500 miles a week, but I do a lot of intensity work, so a lot of interval training, a lot of speed work, and then, you know, usually a long ride on the weekend. And, you know, for me, I don't do – there's other guys that will ride 600 and 700 miles a week. I don't normally do that training for a 24-hour. I'm a lot more on speed work and intensity, a lot of you know, longer, hard, maybe 100-mile rides versus doing slow 200- and 300-mile rides.
So you do have a full-time job, right?
I do. I'm a financial advisor for a large U.S. Bank, and I'm fortunate that I have a very flexible work schedule. I work a full time, but you know, there's nice that if I need to, you know, I can ride with the weather, which is sort of nice.
Yeah.
I'm a father, and I'm a husband, and I work for a living. Yeah.
Pretty remarkable stuff. Tell us a little bit about your actual bike, the bike you use. Now, you may train on one bike and race on another, but tell us a little bit about the bike or bikes you have.
Yeah, I ride Specialized bikes. I ride a Specialized Tarmac, and I also have a Specialized Venge. Of course, it's a full carbon bike, and I run carbon aerodynamic wheels. I use all electronic shifting, so I have shifting on my bars. I also have shifting out at the end of my aero bars.
Yeah, I did see that your battery died, and you were in one gear for a little while.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. It depends on how much you shift with DI2. Usually they'll last 24 hours, but my last two 24 hours, I've actually wore my battery out with about an hour to go. So, but you know, it's everything we can do to go faster. So it's all about aerodynamics and lightweight. And, probably the most important part for a ultra cyclist is your saddle. And I ride a Selle Anatomica saddle that is, adjustable. It's a leather saddle, very similar to the old Brooks's, and it has really helped me to not get as sore when I ride long.
Well, you're pretty thin, as I remember the pictures I've seen. You're not a big hefty guy. You're not huge boned, and you're pretty thin. And those are pretty flexible. They'll mold to your butt pretty much.
They are. I'm 6'4", so I'm not your prototypical cyclist.
No.
and I have lost 45 pounds in the last 10 years.
Wow.
I'm pretty thin now because, as you know, cycling is a power to weight ratio sport.
So it is.
The lighter we can get and stronger we can get, that's the key to going faster.
So if somebody wanted to get into ultra distance cycling, tell us what kinds of mistakes not to make.
Well, I think it's like a lot of sports. Is the key is build up gradually, and probably one of the hardest parts for so many cyclists is figuring out their nutrition and hydration plan.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
You know, if you're going out to do an hour to an hour and a half to 2 hours ride, you can really make mistakes and get away with it to a degree. When you're riding 24 hours, you have to figure out how many calories you need. You have to figure out how much fluid you need. And the big thing is everybody's stomach is different. Some people will ride on all liquid. Some people will eat a lot of solid food. Some will do a combination. You know, I ride with people that they'll eat a lot of fruit. Well, my stomach won't take the acid. So everybody's different, but you got to figure out, you know, what the nutrition and hydration plan is going to be. And then probably the second thing is, you've got to pace yourself. Realize it's a long race, and so you have to find out how hard can you start and still have something left for the end. So the whole pacing yourself is, and it takes some experience. And I would also say it's critical to have a supportive family, because you are going to spend a significant amount of time in training and racing. And most events, you need a support crew, and that support crew is very often your family. And so everybody needs to have some buy-in before you set off on this adventure.
So in 2015, you are planning to do Race Across America. Are you planning to do it as a solo rider or as a team member?
Solo rider.
You are? Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So who's going to be your support crew?
Well, I have a very experienced support crew, Dex and Johnny Took. Dex has ridden across the country twice.
Spoken to Dex.
Have you? Okay, yeah.
Dex is
Dex and Johnny and Dex's brother Joe,
uh-huh.
And two more of Dex's crew that had crewed for him in 2010 and 11. And then my wife and my son and a good friend of mine here who's my massage therapist. So there will be a crew of nine of us. Nine plus me. And so we're all lined up and, I'm training. We're getting ready for June of 2015.
Well, I wish you so much luck on this. I know people who have attempted RAM and who didn't make it and went back and did. I've been following RAM actually off and on since it very first started years and years ago with people like Michael Shermer and, you know, John Howard and all those guys. So I find it to be one of those insanely interesting events. And the insane is kind of the operative there. So I wish you a lot of luck and I appreciate you talking with me about ultra distance racing tonight.
Thank you.
All right. Good luck and have a great winter. We'll watch you at RAM next year.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Scott Lukart joined me from his home in New Philadelphia, Ohio.
So just riding for 24 hours wasn't enough. I have to do RAM again.
Well, but this time he's doing it. He didn't finish the first time.
Right. But that's enough of a challenge. That's
It is. But he had some really good advice, I thought. Certainly nutrition. And I think a lot of people fail with that. And a lot of people fail with pacing. I mean, those are the two big things. He hit them both right on the head. Well, hitting it right on the head, we're going to head on out to Madison, Wisconsin. We're going to speak with the CEO, the president of AeroTech Cycling Designs, Kathy Rogers. Good evening, Kathy. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. You know, it's often the case that mutual friends introduce me to someone and a great conversation happens. In our case, it's our friend Karen Brooks, who used to be the editor of Bicycle Times. How do you know Karen?
I know Karen from serving on the board of Bike Pittsburgh, and I know that she's an avid cyclist. I see her riding around all over the city. So we are friends.
She's really an interesting girl. She's a nice girl. So can we begin our conversation with your background in cycling?
Well, I am an avid cyclist, and I've been in the cycling business and around the world of bicycling for most of my life. I fell in love with bicycling when I was 12-year-old, 12 Girl Scout in camp. And I went for a bicycle ride for 10 miles, and I remember thinking to myself, oh, my gosh, this is what happy feels like. And from then on, I just love to ride my bicycle. It makes me happy.
Happy is good. That is good. So you are in Madison, Wisconsin, not in Pittsburgh this evening. Tell us what you're doing there and how you got there.
It's really been fun. We are participating in the big ride across America. It's a coast-to-coast bicycle ride from Seattle, Washington to Washington, D.C. And we started in Seattle by getting our back tire into the Pacific Ocean. We're going to ride our bike across the country, 3,300 miles, and then we're going to dip our front tire in the salt water in the Atlantic Ocean. So it's just a real exciting bucket list item for us.
How many people?
There are 11 people remaining in the group, and everybody's dedicated and working hard and just loving the daily ritual of getting up and riding all day. It's just real fun.
Nice. Nice. It's like a lifetime dream to do that. And you're doing it. That's really cool. And you actually left your business for all these weeks?
Yes. Yes. It's in good hands. I have really good people that I work with, so I'm in good hands.
Let's talk about your company, AeroTech Design Cycleware. Your tagline is ride longer, feel stronger. It does say a lot, but it doesn't really tell us the whole story. Tell us about your company and why you went into the apparel business.
Well, I went into the apparel business a long, long time ago when I needed to make my own stuff. I was a young woman in southern Florida, and everybody was riding in these black, wool, hot, clammy male shorts. And being a young woman, I wanted my own cyclewear, so I started stitching up some of the things for myself, and then I started making them for my friends and then my friends' friends. And finally, it kind of dawned on me that this could be something that I could actually do for a living instead of getting a job in accounting, which was my major. So that's kind of where it originated, was with my own need for apparel. And it kind of continues that way because, you know, I recognize needs in myself as I ride. So that kind of parlays into the product development that we do at AeroTech.
Let's talk about what makes your company, AeroTech Designs, unique. What makes it unique?
I think that what makes our company unique is the American-made aspect. A lot of people really care about that. And so we have our own factory, we design our own products, we work with our customers, and we really listen to what they're needing and wanting, and we try to kind of listen to what they're saying and give them what they want. We do a lot of product development with our customers. And so that one-on-one connection, because we sell B2C, which is business directly to consumer with no middlemen. So we have that touch point with our customers that a lot of companies don't have, and I think that really helps to make us unique, especially as we're developing product for our customers. For example, Tall And big men, they have limited choices in the marketplace.
Yes, they do. And even XXL isn't XXL all the time.
That's right. And American men are big. And so we cut our products generously, and they really fit. And people put a 2XL jersey on, they're like, ah, yeah. And then the people who put the 3X on is like, oh, my gosh, I've never had anything fit like this before. So we have a lot of loyal customers in that category.
I am sure you do, because not too many manufacturers are addressing it. How about petite and plus-size women? And I think you even do kids' stuff.
We do children, and we do plus-size. Now, petite women, I think there's a lot more choices in cyclewear because it's kind of designed for that fit, smaller figure. So we don't do a whole lot in that category. But we do plus women.
So when I went out to your website, I know you manufacture your own brand under the Aerotech name, but you also offer other people's apparel. What niches is somebody else's short, let's say a Louis Garneau or a Terry, over yours? Where are you not being able to fill that niche?
Well, if you look at it from a business perspective, we are a retailer. And so in order to retail our products, we need to have selection and choices for our customers. Because not every short works for every person. And when you go out there to the marketplace of consumers who ride a lot, everybody has an opinion. Everybody wants something different. So in order to have enough choices so that every cyclist can have a touch point or something that like meets what they're looking for, we bring in some other brands to complement our own, and that creates a nice retail atmosphere for our customers to shop in.
So if somebody like me who has been riding for many years but still has the same issues over and over and over again with this kind of chafing, how are you answering the question, which short is right for me, for example?
Well, you know, that's a really excellent question. And I think that the more that we attempt to answer it, I think that we become better retailers. But there's no one short that's right for everyone. And that's why there's so many choices out there. And it's kind of like, you know, you got to kiss a lot of toes before you marry a prince. And so you really do have to try different things in order to find what works for you. And what the beauty is that with our brand, once you find something that works for you, you can keep getting it over and over and over again. Whereas a lot of times where you go out and you find something that you really love, like a sock or underwear or whatever it is, bike short, and you try to get that again, you can never get it again. But one thing about our brand is that it's got that repeatability factor. So if you do find what you like, you can keep getting it. And our customers do appreciate that. We have a lot of loyal fans for certain products in our line.
So are there people in your organization, if I were to, say, call up and say, okay, this is my problem, can you make a recommendation? Do you have somebody
Absolutely.
On staff? Okay.
Okay. Yeah, we are. The people who answer the phone are all cyclists, and the people who answer the phone the most are people, one fellow even rode his bike across the country. And so these people are out there, you know, rubbing their crotches raw. They understand cycling, so if they're going to talk to you on the phone, they're going to understand exactly what you're talking about and be able to help you.
Tell me a little bit about your fabric sourcing and your sewing and all of that. Everything's done domestically, but you have to source fabric from somewhere. We're not making fabric here.
We try to source as much as we can domestically. We seek them out, and we try to develop relationships with domestic suppliers. But in the end, it's about pleasing our customers. And so if we find a fabric that it braids really well and it feels really soft and stretches really great and washes really well and it's imported, we'll still continue to. We would import that and present it to our customers. In fact, we do quite a bit of importing, only because we have to. But we do look for domestic sources for everything that we do first before we bring something in. But in terms of manufacturing apparel, there's like all these different ingredients that go into a manufacturing process. And so it is a little bit complicated logistically because you have to bring parts in from all over the world in order to make a really good bike short. So being in the manufacturing category allows us to control quality so that we can get consistency and quality. And those are really important things for us as we serve our customers.
Do you get any pushback from customers because they can't try something on right away?
Yeah, there's a certain amount of that, and we do have a fairly high return rate. People order two different sizes and then order and then send back the size that doesn't fit. But that's just part of being in business, and we just accept that as a cost of being in business. And, you know, returns are not our favorite thing to do, but we always do whatever we can to make sure that customer finds the product that's right for them. And So in the end, it's about making sure that our customers are satisfied, and returns are just part of that business.
What is the newest product sort of category that you've gotten into that you think people are going to find interesting? I mean, obviously you have basics. You have cycling shorts, you have tights, you have jerseys, long sleeve, short sleeve, even sleeveless. But is there a product category that you're beginning to sort of look at as a new one that might be of interest to our listeners?
I think that the commuter clothes are just amazing, and I'm wearing them right now as I talk to you on the phone. And the commuter clothes for bicycling are designed with, you know, touches of reflective, so in case you get caught out at night, you still get that walk, walk, walk up and down with your pedal with reflective. But it also looks normal. It's stretchy and it fits, but it looks like normal clothing. And so you can go out in these clothes, which I just came back from dinner, and even though these are cycling, high-performance cycling apparel, I look like a normal person. I'm not, you know, like a stuffed into a racing-type kit. I'm a normal-looking person wearing a normal-looking cycling clothes. And this category really excites me, especially these things that we've been selling. They're called Urban Pedal Pushers. And, for example, the shirt. Yeah, very interesting. The shirt is Sun Protection 50, so you can go out and have it short sleeve or long sleeve, and it protects all of the sun that's coming down on you, but it's got zippered pockets for cycling. The shorts are loose, fit with pockets all over, and all the pockets are zippered, and they just, you know, feel amazing. So that's what we're excited about right now.
Yeah, it sounds exciting because there's a lot more urban cycling going on, and I just think people will find wearing comfortable cycling clothes more conducive to getting on the bike and riding when they didn't have to get in their car.
Yeah, or cycling lifestyle.
Right, 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 right. Very cool. So it's Aerotech Design.
AerotechDesigns.com, that's their website. And so I'm out here on the road riding across the country. And
well, that's what I was going to ask you. When will you be touching your front wheel?
The beginning of August. We expect to be in Washington, D.C. on August 2nd.
Nice.
The tour will be completed in August 2nd, and I do look forward to going back home and seeing my dog and my children and my house and my flowers.
Yeah. What kind of dog? Of course, I'm asking about the dog, not the kids.
Yeah, we love our puppies, don't we? He's just a little mutt that we rescued from the pound, and we just adore him, and he's the sweetest little dog.
Awesome. Well, Kathy, enjoy the rest of your ride across country, and good luck this fall selling season. Thank you so much for talking with me this evening.
Okay, Diana, and make sure you remind me about those wonderful mirrors. I can't wait to ride one.
I will. Thanks so much. Have a great night.
Thanks, Diane. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Kathy Rogers joined me from a dorm room in Madison, Wisconsin, probably University of Wisconsin at Madison.
I think it's really neat when you get to actually talk to an entrepreneur that's out on the road doing, you know, what they love and selling at the same time.
And wearing what they manufacture.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. Well, I think it's also pretty cool that we were wrapping up another hour of The Outspoken Cyclist. We have a very exciting guest this week. I finally got my interview.
Yes.
With the Secretary of Transportation. So Secretary Good. Fox will be with me next week. And Jackie Marchand, who is the president and owner of Woman Tours, is going to talk to us about the tour that's going on right now with one of our friends, Round Lake Erie, which is kind of it's an 11-day tour. So I hope you guys have a great weekend. Thanks so much for listening, and go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next week at this same time with more conversation and news from the world of cycling. If you missed any part of today's show, download the podcast from iTunes or WJCU.org. And you can follow The Outspoken Cyclist on Facebook and Twitter to keep the conversation going throughout the week. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.